Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we talk about an issue facing today's modern American family, when and whether to give children a cell phone. Do the benefits outweigh the negatives? There are plenty of arguments on both sides of that question. We want to hear what you think. But first, we'll get the take of Dr. Minnie Tandon, Washington University child psychiatrist at St. Louis Children's Hospital, and Dr. Ken Haller, SLU Care pediatrician at SSM Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital and professor of pediatrics at St. Louis University. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice
My pleasure.
To have you.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting us.
I think we'll get some response to this issue today.
Oh, yeah.
Ken, let me start with you.
Sure.
As the pediatrician, very quickly, at what age should kids be given cell phones?
Six. No, that's the simple answer. They're really that's what I love about public radio. You can spend time answering this. As in so many things in life, it depends. It depends on what the purpose is of giving a child a cell phone. It depends on their level of maturity. It depends on the kind of conversations you've had with your children about cell phones. The American Academy of Pediatrics has done some work on this, and it has some information on this on their website, as well as their parenting website called healthychildren.org. And basically what they say is that it really is up to the parents to make this decision. Early cell phone use for kids who are younger, early school age, is most likely to be to give them something in case of emergency, to give them something so that you know where they are, so that you can call them, you can catch up with them and make sure that they're safe. And frankly, most kids under about the age of 10, the studies that I'm familiar with show that kids are not so much interested in cell phones as in other types of media where they can watch and interact, like television and iPads and things like that. And getting into the more social aspects of cell phones takes place a little bit later, like 10 or 11. Now, of course, once that happens, then we get into the concept of what are you going to allow your child to do on that cell phone? If you give them a cell phone early in life to give them something where they can talk to you and you can call them, and it really is simply a phone. And it's interesting. A lot of kids don't know that you can actually do that with a phone, which is talk to people.
A phone does just that? What?
What? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
As kids get older and you can get into, and then we start to think about smartphones, you have to think about how smart you want that phone to be and what it can do and what you will have access to. Certainly, if you have that conversation with your children and you decide that they can handle a cell phone, it really is important for parents to have controls where they have full access to everything on the cell phone.
Minnie Tandon, what's your take on all of this?
I completely agree with Dr. Haller. I think the issue is not an age. It's not a grade. It's actually the maturity level mm-hmm. and responsibility level demonstrated by that child. I mean, you may have multiple siblings in a family, and one may actually be chronologically older, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they have demonstrated the responsibility to handle a cell phone, understand privacy, understand that the permanency of what can be on a cell phone, sending out mm-hmm. texts, the dangers of the internet. And if we're talking bare bones skeleton cell phone, you have to ask yourself, why do they need one? Mm-hmm. Is it for safety? Is it because they want to? Is it just because everybody has one, so I should? I think parenting trumps all of the standards about who has one and who should.
Yeah. Well, peer pressure is certainly a part of
Absolutely.
All of that.
Yes.
Very quickly, we've had a number of people who have responded to the subject matter on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read them very quickly to you, parts of them very quickly, and get your reaction. I'll give you all at once. We just got our 10-year-old a flip phone locked so she can only make and receive calls. Those in her contact receive calls from those in her contact list. She does not have access to alter the list. We have another one here. Our 11-year-old just received an old flip phone. She's terribly embarrassed about having a flip phone. This is a big deal in the household. Kids of divorce can probably handle it a little younger. It may be the only connection they have with both parents. Uh-huh. And let's see. My son's excuse to have a phone was that all his friends have phones. Well, there you are. That runs, a number of issues that we've already raised here. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd like to react to what I just read, any of those particular issues? Minnie?
Well, I think, it's common practice in our practice to hear everyone's doing it. Everyone mm-hmm. has one. How come our family is different? But everybody's family is different. And, again, it depends on what your purpose of your cell phone is and your responsibility level of your child. And I think contextually, it's true. If you're using it just for safety purposes, why not? there's going to be some embarrassment. But, you know, you could also use it as an as a way to build trust and say, look, yes, you have this very archaic flip phone. And yes, it may be embarrassing, but what we're trying to do is build trust. Once you can show us the responsibility level of just this bare skeleton version, as you age and as we can trust that you're using it appropriately, maybe we build in the extra products that are available now.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think this gets to a deeper question of what kind of parenting are you doing with your children. If it's this authoritative, you're going to do this and no question about it, and I don't want to hear anything from you, I make the rules and there's no questioning it, that's probably not a really great way to be able to have these conversations with your kids. On the other hand, if you're completely permissive and give a kid a fully loaded, you know, iPhone 7 or Galaxy 8 at the age of 6 and say, go right ahead, they're gonna have problems. What we really want is more of an authoritative parenting model where the parents say to the kids, we're in a partnership here, but I am your parent and there are certain rules I'm going to make in your best interest. You can ask me about that and I'll explain it, but still the rules will be my rules and you're going to have to meet certain standards and certain benchmarks in order to move from the flip phone to a more advanced phone to a more fully enabled phone. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And so that gets to a more basic issue of what kind of parenting are you doing with your children?
But there are some negatives, I would think, for all ages, for youngsters, that is. We hear that it is actually addictive, that it's very, very difficult, and many of this would probably be in your wheelhouse here, that they can have some developmental consequences.
Mm-hmm.
There's concern about radiation and using them. I mean, that's a real issue. I thought it was a bogus issue a while back, but apparently it's not. What do you think about this? I mean, you've got to be aware of consequences like this as well.
Mm-hmm.
How does a parent do that?
Absolutely. I think you're entering into a new era, and I think the word addictive is a little bit tricky for our field. It's definitely habit forming. It causes a lot of arguments in our households. Parents, I spend more time talking about media, I feel like, lately than any other topic in the use of cell phones. If you are able to set some standards up front, like Dr. Haller is saying, if you are able to realize this is going to be a dynamic process, you're not just going to one day buy the gift as a phone and then stop. It's going to have to be ongoing. And you're going to have to check in with your children over and over. Who are you talking to? How is that going? Is anyone saying strange things to you? I think you're going to have to you're going to have to look at it as a dynamic process, rather than a one-time, here's your phone. So yes, it can be what you say in quotes, addictive, but it's also possible that you could set parameters and that it won't be that way for all children.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the problem, of course, is that the parents are oftentimes on the cell phone for a lot.
Right. Modeling, we know, is a very ancient.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very tried and true practice. If you want to model good behavior, you're going to not text when you drive as an adult. You're going to have to set some standards. If you don't want your kids at the table during dinner on their phones, then you might have to actually show that you can do the same, which is pretty challenging.
Yeah.
And health consequences?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the tricky things, too, is that some of these media are so new that we just don't have longitudinal studies to look at them. I think that one of the things we do know is that the more that people substitute electronic media for actual human interaction, the more problems kids are going to have. You can't just sit a child in front of a television set or a computer or a cell phone or an iPad and say that's just as good as me having a conversation with them or reading with them or talking to them or doing these things. So media in and of themselves are not, you know, good or evil. It's what we do with them. It's what we allow our kids to do with them. It's how we as parents manage that. Even before this, one of my colleagues back in the 90s when her daughter was a teenager, they would watch The Gilmore Girls and Buffy the Vampire Slayer every week together. And that allowed them to have conversations about girls growing up as teenagers, looking at Rory and looking at Buffy. And, you know, her daughter could talk about what that girl was going through. So it can be used in a positive way, but that's only if the parents become engaged with the media too and are consuming some of it with the child or the adolescent so that they can discuss it rather than saying, you go watch your thing, I'll go watch mine. And
a more interactive version.
Is definitely helpful.
You know, there was a program program on earlier today, 1A, in which this subject was discussed in very general terms. And many, one of the things that was brought up was, ironically, that kids with these devices have become more lonely rather than more interactive with their peers, and that the problem with that is depression is often the result. Have you run into this at all?
Well, it's a tricky subject again, but I think the idea is that you then, instead of comparing yourself to yourself and your own standards, you now have thousands of people to interact with. For example, if you're talking about cell phones and internet use, and now you have said, oh, well, so-and-so's having a great time and I'm not there. There is a constant attention to where you should be rather than how you're doing yourself on your own. And so this has brought to many teenagers and younger kids this idea that they constantly have to compete or they feel left out. Not to mention there are some extremes on the internet that are particularly acting exclusively in their own interests and are not inclusive. So does it cause depression? I'm not sure. We're not sure there about that yet. Okay, that's a little bit more complicated between genetics and environment. And also moderation. I mean, it's important to know that it's not causal to depression, but really it sure could exacerbate your self-esteem and your coping, especially as if Dr. Haller was just saying, it's about how you interact with your family and your phone. If you're an isolated kid and now you're noticing that everyone looks happy on the internet and you don't have anyone to moderate that at home, imagine the impact of that child versus a child who talks to their family and says, you know, it seems like everyone else seems to be happy all the time and I am here alone. That's a very different impact on that child. So we don't want to imply causation of the cell phone causing clinical depression, but we definitely want to say if you could actually talk to them and things are going awry in their self-esteem, it may be helpful to do it that way rather than imply it's just causal to depression.
Yeah, we have an awful lot to learn, don't we? As you indicated earlier, it's new technology changing all the time. We're not really quite sure what it's doing for or against us.
Right. Yeah, there is a lot we have to learn about these specific media. But in a way, it's kind of like a MacGuffin in that it's a thing that is it's just something out there that still doesn't change the fact that human interaction is by far the most valuable part. You know, as Dr. Tannen was saying, one of the things that kids will do is they'll scroll through things and see, you know, on Twitter and Vine and Snapchat and see all these people having fun and think I'm not the only one. And then they go through what's called FOMO, fear of missing out, you know. So
sorry to get an acronym.
I know. I'm up with all the kids now.
Yeah,
I know all the
right.
kids stuff.
We have to keep up with these kids, you know.
Right. But it still gets down to that basic human reality of we have to talk to our kids. And one of the things that can be an issue for parents is because there are so many things that are dragging their kids in this direction that sometimes my job, and I think probably yours too, Dr. Tannen, is to empower parents to actually be parents.
That's right.
And say, yes, it is okay for me to set limits. This is a loving thing to do. And those things that I heard as a kid, which I'm doing this for your own good, and I'm going, it doesn't feel like my own good. later on, I feel that it really paid off. In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics, you know, on that website I mentioned earlier, healthychildren.org, talks about making a family media use plan. And there's a tool right there where you can have each child in, you know, you put down each child's name, what type of media they can use, what times they can use it. At certain times, everything gets turned off, like at meal times and other family times. These things are valuable tools, but if they are allowed free rein without the mediating factor of adults to say to give it some perspective, they can be very, very problematic.
We have to take a break. We'll do that now, and I'm going to encourage our listeners to get into this conversation. I'm sure there are specific questions folks out there might have, and if you do, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Minnie Tandon, a child psychiatrist at St. Louis Children's Hospital, and Dr. Ken Haller of Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital. We've been talking about phones, as is the way we've described what this program was going to be about, but I'd like to take a moment to talk about screen time itself and what sort of impact that could be having developmentally on kids. Ken, do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, so an awful lot of time is being spent in front of a screen.
I am amazed sometimes when I get these when I get kids in my office and they're in for a regular physical, and one of the questions we ask is, how much time do you spend in front of a screen for recreation? This isn't homework. This is computer, video games, various things like this, tablets. And some kids will go, seven hours a day.
And you were hoping minutes.
I was hoping minutes. And you know, basically from the time this also includes time between classes when they're texting their friends and on Facebook and things like that. And the thing is, I don't know that we quite know what effect this is going to have, because this is a really terra incognita for the human race. I don't think it's a good thing. And again, what my concern my concern is that this is a lot of time to be doing this one thing. My bigger concern is in cutting into actual time spent with friends, time spent with family, time in physical recreation. Again, I think some of the health effects that we know of from increased screen time are increased obesity, increased type 2 diabetes, increased issues of just being sedentary. And so
and poor sleep habits.
Yeah. Yeah,
and poor sleep. Bright light in your face 1 minute before bed.
Exactly. Kids will be on their tablet until they go to bed, and they'll say, I can't get to sleep till 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll go, I wonder why that is. those are some of the health effects we're seeing, and there are a lot more studies going on about this.
What are you finding, Dr. Tandon?
We spend quite a number of hours in office visits about screen time. There's always a debate in families about how much is too much and how much is not enough, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now, there are obviously benefits, too. There are people learning all kinds of education. They use it for homework. Now, outside of that, the problem is what Dr. Haller alluded to, which is that you're not doing certain things of childhood. You're not running. You're not exercising. Mm-hmm. When you're on screen time, you're not interacting with a real human. With my preschool clinic, the 0 to 2 and 0 to 6-year-olds, we really want to limit that. They learn from 3D actual live interaction. And when they're on a screen, people are starting really young. That's why I'm telling you about this real young. They're not getting the 3D interaction with the real world. So I don't want to say it's all negative, but it's certainly taking away from things we need to be doing.
Yeah. So this question of when should a child get a cell phone, we have to start much earlier in terms of parents looking at their interactions with their children and when they put them in front of screens, how much time they put them in front of screens versus how much time they sit down and read them a book and point out things and talk to them and just interact in that way. That is just so much more important. And if you can establish that foundation early in life, then that will hold over. And when kids do get their devices, they won't see it as the only thing to do.
I understand what you're saying about knowing your child and when when it's time that they might have a phone. Is there an age which they definitely should not have them? I mean, should you not? You said 6 little while ago, and I take that in the spirit which was given.
Yeah.
But I've seen pictures of kids that are maybe 3 on a cell phone.
Yeah. Again, I actually saw that this morning. I was making rounds at St. Mary's Hospital, seeing the newborn babies, and one of the kids the older siblings was playing on a phone at age 3. Now, again, and she was doing stuff with it that I can't imagine doing. That's the other thing, is kids are real naturals at this. Now, I don't think this was her own cell phone, but I think that that probably before the age of 7 or 8, it's probably inappropriate for a kid to have their very own phone. You can use it every now and then to play a game with them and let them play a game, but that cannot substitute for human interaction.
What do you think?
I would agree. I think you can't own your own phone at that age for sure. But the idea of having it in tidbits here and there for learning interaction and learning, we can't get away from it. It's the way that technology has moved.
And teaching the parent
before
how to use
they
the
can
phone.
Say their ABCs, we can slide. The button on the iPhone.
We've got some calls. Let's get the listeners into the conversation. We'll start with Sarah calling from St. Louis. Sarah, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Sarah? Sarah,
hello?
Are you there? Yeah, Sarah, go ahead, please. You're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, so I found some very disturbing messages, and this is because I spy on my 15-year-old son. He's talking about, let's go get baked this weekend. And now I'm concerned about the other child that he was talking with, and I don't even know the parent, and I'm not sure what to do.
Well, let's see if we can give you some advice on that. Dr. Tandon, what do you suggest?
Have you been able to talk to him at all yet about the situation?
No, and I honestly feel like I shouldn't let him know that I know, because if I tell him that I've spied on him...
Well, there's some safety issues involved, and I think mm-hmm. that it might not make you the most popular person for him, but I think you might have to debunk what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. If I tell him I spied on him, he's not going to confide in me. So I'm trying.
Yeah. I think
this is a kid who is, he swims 6 days a week. He is not, I mean, he takes one or two honors classes. He swims 6 days a week. This friend of his is in desperate need of help, and I don't know his father. His mother passed away, and I'm not sure what to do other than just kind of have knowledge.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for the call. We'll see if there's anything more to be said about that from this end.
Yeah, I would say that again at this age. It sounds like he's a really good kid, which is great, and he might have gotten this message from this person, and. Might have been unsolicited. The thing is that, you know, this is a MacGuffin in the sense that this has always been a situation for parents. You know, back in the 1950s and 60s, parents would go into the room and find Playboy magazines under the bed and then say, how dare you go in my room? I said, well, all right, maybe this was a bit of invasion of privacy on some level. However, you are also my son. So this might be an opportunity for you to reset the parameters of the relationship a little bit and say, look, You're still a teenager. I am still responsible for you. I love you, and I don't want you to get hurt. Perhaps we need to have a conversation about what the limits are of this and what we can talk about, but we do need to talk about these things, and we do need to talk about this.
Any advice with regard to discipline in cases like this or where parents feel that their phone has been abused or use of it? Any thoughts? Minnie?
Well, one of the most common things is that we typically advise removal of the phone for a while or mm-hmm. earning it back in some cases mm-hmm. Until we can show responsibility at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Kevin.
I would agree very much so.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, it is a privilege. These privileges do sometimes need to be earned. And if kids show that they're not up to that responsibility, then they need a period where that can happen.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Draven will join us from Highland, Illinois. Draven, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hey. I'm calling because I was listening and I was hearing you guys talk about, you know, how young should, you know, a child get a cell phone or something or anything like that. I actually have a little brother. He's six now, but whenever he was like two, three, you know, four, my father and stepmother would actually, you know, just give him their phones and just have that, you know, as entertainment for them instead of, you know, them actually entertaining him, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that made you uncomfortable, clearly.
Yeah, it does. It, you know, it really did make me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, as an older brother, you know, I do mm-hmm. see how, you know, human interaction is the most important thing, especially, you know, at that age.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've lost him.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
you know, I don't want to pick on your family member because it's not unusual to see that happen. You know, you get stuck at the airport and you're run out of toys that are novel something, and then people hand kids their phone. I think moderation is really key here, not to overdo it, not to substitute it for a human interaction and play, but to think about how often are you doing that as a crutch.
Right. And it's really important also to set controls on the phone itself. I mean, there are a lot of ways that you can control what a phone can do, what it can access. So if there are games on the phone a child can play, that's fine. But then you might, you know, if it's put into airplane mode so that the child can't get on the internet and start cruising around on the internet because who knows what they'll find, that might be a way of looking at that. And anytime a child is given a phone that is more than just a plain talk and listen phone, it really is important when you get that phone to talk to the people at the cell phone store about what kind of controls are on this phone and how do I make sure those work.
One final phone call as time moves along. Philip and Florissant, go ahead, please, but make it quick if you would.
I just wanted to call in and let you know that, you know, my wife and I, when we decided to get our kids smartphones for safety reasons and communication so they could reach us whenever, wherever, we had a discussion with them where we told them outright that we reserve the right to look through their phones, and it's not us not trusting them, and it's not us invading their privacy, but it was us wanting to make sure that they were being safe so if they were doing something wrong, we could explain to them and teach them what it was they were doing wrong and how they could be safer in the future. And both of my children, which are both now into their teen years, they were both completely okay with it, and both of them have shown us that they can be very responsible with what they're doing both online and on their phone.
Good for you for setting the limits up front. And good and I'm glad that your kids responded well to that.
That's an excellent strategy. You're an excellent parent, Philip.
Good for Philip. I've saved this till the end because we've obviously been discussing when to give the kids a cell phone. I think the consensus here is when you figure out if the kid is capable of dealing with it responsibly, that's the time you should do that. But there is an effort that's being – it's a national effort, although it hasn't exactly caught fire yet, called Wait Until 8th, in which a parent, and I've forgotten which state it is, has basically come up with this idea, wait until the 8th grade before giving your kid a cell phone, period, end of report. I think she's only signed up about 3,000 parents who have done this. Your thoughts about that, Ken? I'll start with you and then to Minnie. Good idea.
Again, I facetiously said earlier, age six. And I think that any arbitrary number like that is can be problematic. You really have to have that conversation with your child and make sure you know what the parameters are, and then you can make that decision for yourself.
And I would say the merit of her idea is probably wonderful. Mm-hmm. I guess she's trying to say delay. As long as you can delay it, delay it. The flip side is it doesn't work for everyone, unfortunately, and people are different and kids are different.
Is there a final thought you'd like to leave us with?
Make sure you're talking to your kids about everything, including cell phone use and media.
Right. Start that early and make sure it goes on through their entire lives.
I want to thank you both so much. Dr. Minnie Tandon, thank you for being with us. Child psychiatrist.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you. And pediatrician Dr. Ken Haller.
It's always
a pleasure to see you, Ken, and we'll see you back before too long, I'm sure. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.